The Farm in the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Nutrien Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services, delivering unparalleled grower access to high-performance inputs, innovative technologies, and personalized agronomic expertise. Welcome to Farm in the Countryside. I'm Andrew McRae. We've got a real treat for you this week on our podcast. April Hemmes from near Hampton, Iowa is my guest. Not only does she farm a large acreage, she seems to have done just about everything else in the ag industry too. And you're going to enjoy her enthusiasm and humor as well. It's next on Farming the Countryside. As I just mentioned, I think you're really going to enjoy today's guest. From farming with her 100-plus-year-old grandfather to traveling across the nation and around the globe in support of ag interests, April Hemmes has quite a story to tell, and she tells it in a way you'll enjoy. Here's our conversation. Visiting with April Hemmes, Hampton, Iowa. April, first of all, thanks for joining me here on Farming the Countryside.
No problem. I got plenty of time today. Not out in the fields. It's just pouring rain here.
Well, let's start there because that seems to be the case in a lot of the Midwest. What have you gotten done in the field so far?
Well, I've got some corn planted. I'm probably 3/4 done. Most guys around in my area, which is north central Iowa, you know, maybe half done, maybe getting a good start. It's all, you know, of course, the seed dealers don't want you to plant with a cold rain coming, and we've had nothing but cold rain coming, so it's a challenge. But I'm getting really good at cleaning out the gauge rails this year. So anyway, so that's most guys, you know, that's where we're at. You work the field. A lot of people are waiting to have hog manure put on or getting two tanks of anhydrous a day. I heard that story earlier. So it's just another challenging spring for us farmers.
Well, talk about that. You mentioned anhydrous there. Were people able to get it on in a timely fashion, or did you have to switch to some dry, or what happened in that area?
I think, I know one guy wasn't getting the tanks, and then he ended up hiring some of his anhydrous put on. And, yeah, some people switched to liquid, you know, if they could, just to get it done. But in my area, there's a lot of hog buildings and a lot of chicken buildings. So I just talked to a farmer this morning at the farm store. We were getting stuff, and he's still waiting on 4 fields to have hog manure applied because they're all running behind. So, you know, and you can't get the corn in without the nitrogen there. So that's been a challenge for all those people. On my farm, I have liquid nitrogen put on with my chemicals because it's just me. So I call that my hired man, where they, you know, I go out so I don't have to get the anhydrous on or my chemicals on. So that's how I get things that done a little bit earlier.
So do you do all of that then yourself on your farm?
No, I hire the liquid nitrogen put on with my pre-chemicals, and then okay. I'll work the ground and plant. Yeah. And I get a little bit of help from a high school kid after school's out. So right. Other than that, it's just me.
April, what I was saying is are you do tillage there? You're not no-till, is that right?
I am mostly no-till, especially with my soybeans. They're almost all no-till. And this year I have about 200 acres of no-till corn. So I'm doing a little bit of that. I have some CSP, Conservation Security Program, and I'm no-tilling that, and it's hills, so it works really good. And then that's the area I put cover crop on also. So, you know, that's what I was doing yesterday, finishing up my no-till corn into soybean grass.
The cover crops, are you doing cover crops on everything or just certain places?
No, just certain places, because my other ground is, some of it's fairly flat and I have creeks running through it. So I have edge of stream practices there, which, you know, do just as much good in a lot of situations as those cover crops. But the cover crops I have on this highly erodible piece, and they've really worked well so far. I just put the cereal rye on and flew it on. So I have not done the turnips and radishes yet. So I still have that to look forward to.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that for just a second. You know, here on our farm, we've done some rye and radishes, and that has worked well. But, you know, part of the problem is when do you get them on? Do you have
Exactly.
trouble? When do you get them on? You just made time after harvest somehow to get it in the ground?
I actually fly it on. We have
Okay.
a lot of it up here just because of we're so far north. And I don't do silage anymore. I used to have a cow calf herd and do silage, and that would have worked well. But no, I have it flown on in August, late August or early September is when they usually do it. So, and you know, you don't believe it when you see them flying these seeds on and it goes through the standing corn. And boy, if you get a nice little rain after that, there comes those, you know, little plants, cereal rye coming right up. So it's kind of unbelievable. But that has worked so far, but you know, it's not an inexpensive practice for the farm.
Yeah, you know, we have done that on our farm. Now, we didn't do it last year as far as flying it on, but I agree, you get the right conditions, it'll work. And I have good pictures, you know, I've taken with, you're right, standing corn, and you've got a nice crop of rye and radishes and different stuff coming along there. So it can work. But
Yep.
I was curious how you were getting it on up there.
Yeah, well, that's how most of us do. You can hear those planes flying in early September. Usually, is when we fly a lot of that on.
So, the way you're doing cover crops, though, is mostly just targeting fields that you think have more erosion, and just doing it on those fields. Is that right then?
Right. Yep. And then I will also no-till that field too. And it's about a 200 acre stretch, and it's pretty hilly. So I think it works, and it's lighter soils for around here. I have not tried them on my thicker black dirt, but this is a little bit hillier, a little less CSR, and it just works perfect on that ground.
So you've gotten some of this crop in. Anything up yet?
Just about ready. I had one of the seedsmen dig up, and I've been digging too, and the one field I got in the middle of April is just about ready to peek through, and another field is the same way. And everything I've dug up, and I just talked to some guys this morning, you know, I'm just surprised how good a quality the seed is still in for laying in that cold, wet dirt for so long. So, you know, good quality, and sprouted. So I'm kind of encouraged. You know, hopefully the soil stays soft, you know, doesn't get that hard crust on top, and these, you know, plants can peek through.
Yeah, I guess that's one good thing about the extra rain. We haven't crusted over yet.
Exactly. I hope not, because I don't have a rotary hoe anymore. So, the good old days of rotary hoeing.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, we have quite a bit of our corn up. We've got it all in. And kind of, you know, looking at these stands and hoping everything pops on through. But it's, you know, certainly we're in Missouri, so we're south of you, so I guess we're a little warmer. But still, it's been kind of a slow process getting it to come up.
Right. Yep.
You know,
very much so.
I want to jump into something that, you know, some people hearing this will know you from the Top Producer magazine, because you were I want to make sure I get it right, the Executive Women in Agriculture Trailblazer Award winner. Tell people what kind of goes into that, or what that is all about, because they may have heard about it and they'll recognize your name and perhaps your picture from the magazine.
Yeah, well, that was a great honor and kind of a surprise. But it was for, you know, I get this email sent to me to, you know, fill out the award, and I thought, so I also serve on the United Soybean Board and the Iowa Soybean Board. And I go, well, what better than to have some of the women representing? I said, I want somebody, you know, in the soybean world to win this. So I said, we need to all apply. And, well, who knew I would be the one to come out? But it was about advocating for agriculture, business innovation, and industry and community leadership. So I was just very honored. And, you know, like I always say, and anybody who wins awards, we're not out here doing what we're doing to win awards. We're doing it because we love it. And, you know, we want to help people. And as far as advocating, the more I go out and talk in public, the more I see the need for agriculture to stand up for itself and start explaining to these people and showing transparency of what we do out on the farm. So that's what the award was about.
Well, I know a big part of your life, certainly besides farming, is this advocacy side. Was that something that you always did, or is it something that you learned over time by being a part of those organizations?
I think it's been learned, and I actually had this question asked of me, did you ever think you would have to explain to people what you're doing on the farm? And I said, no, because, I mean, I've been at home farming for 34 years now. And if you would have told me then, you know, in 30 years, you're going to have to really start explaining yourself. And I just think it's amazing, but it's so obvious that everyone's so far removed from agriculture anymore and what we do on the farm and how we use the technology we have available that they just don't understand it. And they remember maybe feeding the chickens by hand and, you know, they want us to have grandpa's farm. And that's just not the way how ag works anymore to feed the millions of people. So it's kind of amazing, but I just enjoy talking with people and would like to dispel some of the myths about agriculture. And trust me, there's a lot of misinformation out there. And just to have them maybe have a better understanding, we don't have to come to an agreement, but to have a better understanding. But to be out there, I think is very important for us to just, you know, talk about what we do with people.
Those conversations that you have, are those ones that you're seeking out somehow through certain avenues, or how are you having those discussions with people?
I get asked to speak quite a bit. Like this past Monday, I was up in Minneapolis and talked to a women's chef convention. And there were three of us farmers on the panel, and it was friendly for the most part, but I knew we'd probably get into an area where someone might not totally agree with what we do. And of course we did. And there was a young 20-something-year-old who was a chef plus had chickens and pigs on her farm and just said, I will never let soybeans be fed to my livestock because it's such a highly subsidized industry. And I think they had to pick my jaw up off the ground. And, you know, what I really wanted to say was, I bet my banker would like to see that money. but another lady answered it very correctly. You know, she just said, if that's how you choose to, you know, raise your livestock, document it and market it that way. And I'm thinking, what is she talking? You know, in my mind, I'm going, what is she talking about? You know, I would have loved to have had a conversation with her about, you know, her feelings and things like that. And I quite frankly don't have a problem talking with people and having uncomfortable conversations, which a lot of farmers just, you know, this is my business, I'm doing it this way, forget about it. But, you know, just having those conversations of this is what really is going on out here, or this is how I do it and what I do. And they sure don't like it when I say I raise 100% genetically modified crops on my farm. This is why I do it. You know, it makes my soil healthier. I can no-till much better. And, you know, and I've been doing it for over 20 years. So, and that's what the market calls for in my area. I have a, you know, biodiesel and crushing facility 10 miles from me and an ethanol plant. So you go with what you can. And if I'm not economically successful, I'm not going to be here, and somebody else is going to be farming this ground, which has been in my family well over 100 years. So I kind of like to not be the last generation.
Right. Well, when you mentioned that, like about GMOs, do you feel like because you're there and you explain it that most audiences then are accepting of that answer, or do they still tune you out because they have their preconceived notions are too strong?
I think it's probably both, but I was also on a podcast earlier in the day and explaining it. And this lady, you know, you can't see our faces on the podcast, but she goes, I have never heard it explained that way. Thank you. Now I understand a little bit better, you know, because I said I don't have to till the ground. I don't use as much fuel. I'm not losing as much topsoil, you know, as other ways of farming have to till that much more, you know. And I don't, especially when I explain, you know, especially glyphosate or Roundup as they know it, you know, it might be a quart, But I spread that quart over an acre, which is about a football field, you know, and you might see these big tanks, but just know they're mostly water. You know, along with that quart, I'll put on 15 to 20 gallons of water over that football field. And then you see the eyes go, oh, you know. So if you, I like to use analogies that they can understand. I run up against people, you know, well, you, I don't like those corporate farms. And, you know, you say, well, listen, 96 to 97% of all farmers are family farmers just like me. And they're like, well, I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about those corporate farms. And I go, 96. And so you can tell right away, usually. And it's, for some reason, it's a cab driver or a waiter or waitress that likes to argue with me. If they, you know, if they ask what I do, and I don't mind talking, and usually my husband goes, oh, here we go. Because he doesn't work at all on the farm with me. It's all, he has the real job in town and pays for mine and doesn't drive a tractor. He did drive, he rode in my combine once, one round, and I was excited because I thought he was learning how to drive it. And I'm like, just push this button. It's auto steer. It has row finder. It's great. And he gets there. He goes, you can let me out at the end. And I go, you're not going to learn how to drive it. And he goes, no, I just wanted to see what a couple $100,000 would buy you. okay, bye. Just keep bringing me lunch then.
Good. Hey, I'm enjoying this conversation. I need to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this.
And Nutrien Ag Solutions, a new day is upon us. The rebrand from Crop Production Services marks a defining moment in a storied history. Driven by renewed promise and purpose, today Nutrien Ag Solutions is more equipped to grow our world from the ground up and serve the agricultural community than ever before. Delivering the same valued personalized service that shaped countless trusted relationships with access to a new unrivaled network of business capabilities that will carry them into tomorrow. In an industry ever influenced by change and uncertainty, their continued commitment to every grower's journey will deliver new possibilities. We are partners, advocates, advisors, and stewards of success. We are Nutrien Ag Solutions.
Visiting with April Hemmes. And April, you were talking about your farm there and advocacy and everything. You know, one thing we haven't done yet, take me back. I think we're talking earlier, mid-80s, when you made the decision to come back to the farm. To talk through that and how that all happened.
Well, actually, my last job before I came back to the farm, I was working for a congressman in Washington, D.C. And I just went, because I wanted to eventually get into international agriculture. And then when I saw all that you had to go through, and I'm not a writer at all. I'm a doer. You know, I give kudos to all you people in journalism who can make words sound fancy, but that's not me. And I was really missing the farm. And I have an animal science degree from Iowa State, but, you know, I graduated in 82, and that was kind of when the farm crisis really, the hammer really hit. So anyway, in 85, I called home and I said, I'm coming home. Because that was, they always knew my dad and grandpa, that was my end goal. They didn't think I'd really do it, you know. And my dad said, no, you're not. And it was my grandfather that said, if she wants to come home and farm, we're making room for her and she's coming home. So my grandfather, God love him, he lived to be 101 years old. And it was just great to have him around so long. And, you know, you think about it, Andrew. He started farming with three horses, and he lived long enough to see auto steer come in for the equipment. Isn't that amazing? So I always say, this is what I'm going to see in my lifetime, you know?
Oh, yeah. It's amazing. And he was still planting corn when he was 100. Is that right?
Yes, I have. Yeah, he planted corn and soybeans. He came around with me and then combined corn with me at 100, too. So dad was wondering, how are we going to get him up there? I said, I don't think we have to worry about it. And he had already climbed up in the cab. So so he was a goer, and we were very fortunate. He was only, you know, really bad the last couple of days of his life. Other than that, you know, he drove every bean to town for me when he was 89 years old. So, you know, it was just great to have him around and hear his stories and how they farmed through the Depression and things like that. And we take so much for granted now. And I honestly think of Dad and Grandpa every day, and I thought, wow, if they knew all that I was doing by myself that three of us used to do, and I've added more land, you know, it's the technology and equipment and the hybrid. And he was really happy when on a piece of his, I got over 200 bushel an acre, and he just thought he would never see the day of 200 bushel an acre. Well, now it's a crop failure if we don't get that. So how times may change. But anyway, so I came home and we converted an old shed into a farrowing house, and I bought a bunch of gilts. I bought a bunch of bred gilts and then started raising pigs. And so that's kind of what I did. I had the pigs and worked for the farm for the corn to feed my pigs and worked into the system like that. So, and that's what I always tell kids now, you know, that want to come home and farm. I said, well, you know, you need to work for the farm. The farm doesn't have to work for you. If you really want to do it, you have to find a way. Get good at something that farm has to pay for, and then you provide that service. And so that's kind of my advice to those young things. So
I'm interested, when you were farming there in the mid-80s, what helped make it through? Because that was awfully hard times, and I was young, but I remember it and saw a lot of change. Yeah. What helped make you all get you all through it?
I think it was the our farm was paid for. You know, dads and grandpa had my whole farm, which is approximately 1,000 acres, is all family owned. And I'm buying some of the other kids out on part of it. But I think that helps a lot. You know, we did not have high debt, and that really helped. And then farming, my grandpa would farm as cheaply as he can. When you farm with somebody who went through the Depression, you find a lot of ways around it, you know. But then I come along, and I'm like, we have to use better hybrid. So it was a melting of the two. But I think, you know, keeping our expenses in check was a big thing. And boy, are we looking at that right now. You know, that's, you just can't go crazy with stuff with the prices we have now. So, you know, that's what's really helped me throughout the years is, you know, what's going to work for this farm. You know, don't get your debt too high, you know, and look at things like that.
Well, as you moved up to current day, then did you stick with the livestock or did you do totally crops?
Well, yeah, I always say I'm semi-retired because I got rid of the livestock. and then I got a phone call from about three young guys wanting to farm my ground because they heard I was retired. And I go, chill, boys, I'm not done yet. So, no, what happened was, so I used to have, I was running a 60-head cow-calf herd. I had a 100 sows farrow to finish, and then the farm ground. And I said, boy, something's got to go. Well, and the hogs went when they got really cheap. And then I took over the whole farm in 93, which in Iowa was a great year to take over a farm, I may add, with the floods of 93, and it kept raining like this. And it was when my grandpa said, this is the worst year I've ever seen farming. And I started clapping. I went, all right. He goes, why are you happy? I go, because it's my first year and I'm getting it out of the way right away. Hey, we got to look at the positives, right? So, so anyway, then, you know, the hogs kind of went down the road, and then I took over the cattle, the cow calf herd, which I love, but you can't keep cows around for pets forever. So I enjoyed it, but what I saw my calling and my best place for my other time was in leadership, and I had a lot more going on then, so I sold the cows to the neighbor boy who was kind of helping me with them, and he still rents my pasture. So I still get to see them every day. I just don't have to fix them. So that's always a plus.
on the crop side then, I think I remember this right. You aren't renting any ground. It's all family ground then. Is that right?
Yep. Yep. It's all family ground, and I rent it from, you know, we have a trust. So I rent it, and I own half of it, and I'm sorry. My husband and I own half of it, and I always have to get that in there. And I rent the other half from the trust. So that's kind of how my farm works. So it's just nice to have it that way, and that's how we work.
You know, I wanted to ask you, because you're in crops, but you aren't out there chasing a lot of rental ground. Does right. that change any the way you farm and or market your crop? Because that is a little different than some folks where maybe they're paying a lot of rent for different ground and so forth. Or do right. you feel like you do the exact same, make the same decisions as if you were renting quite a bit of ground?
Well, I have the luxury, I think, of knowing I'm going to have that ground. I don't have to worry about up in the rent or this or that. So I can make those. I sold 2020 corn already. I can sell out there a little bit farther to get started in my marketing plan. So yeah, I think it does play into it. And I also may not be as aggressive in some of the soil tillage or practices because I want to care for the land because it is family and I want to be able to pass it down better than how I got it. So, I have probably 10 acres that I just don't do anything with because that's the best thing for it. And it's not in a program or anything. Some of it's a little bit old pasture ground, but it'll flood out. It's along a creek. And I might get a crop out of it every 5 years. So I just, I just kind of let that set fallow. And it really bugs some of my neighbors, but I think that's why I do it too, just to bug them. But on the marketing thing, I noticed when I came back home, I would take a day off to go to a marketing class or something, and that would just bother my dad and grandpa because, they just sold when they needed the money. And I said, and then they would make me work twice as hard when I got back. I said, I don't think you understand. I'm making you more money by learning how to market better than I ever would changing tires on wagons or, things like that. And so that's why I learned pretty quickly marketing was the key to a successful, farm strategy and plan. So, that was another thing that was another reason I got the award is I helped start a marketing group, women's marketing group, because the guys all wanted to meet in the morning. And I said, well, I'm getting kids ready for school or whatever. That was a while ago, but now, we have 15 to 20 of us that are pretty religiously come once a month, November to April. We usually have our last one early and have guest speakers and just talk marketing and share. And it has, we're going on our eighth year now. It's just been great, just to learn different strategies, talk options. We might have Naomi Boom Skype in or something and some others. So it's just, it's been very rewarding and rewarding monetarily for these women too, because it makes us all better marketers and pay attention more. So it's been kind of fun that way.
Any insights on marketing in this current year with so much? I mean, we always got uncertainty,
yeah,
but
did it 2 years ago. No, really, less
true.
Than that today. <That's the tweet. laughs> I'm holding my head right now. So, so before and after the reports, then you're always right there. That's one I always tell people. Or if somebody asks you what you sold for, let them go first and then just lie and say you got better than them, That's my advice. I tell you what, I'm honest. I did very good on my beans, and then plus we got that the payment, which really helped on only half, and I'm still sitting here waiting on the other. Well, it's nice, a little bit less than half, but boy, there's just no guessing with this trade war going on. Just when all the analysts said, okay, we're turning the corner on beans, and then they go down the next day. So who knows? It's unfortunate, but the big thing in what we do in our marketing is go over our marketing plan, and you have to stick with it, And I have to a point this year, but then the farmers were eternally optimistic, right? So I did good on my earlier sales, but now you're just, it's just cross your fingers and wait and see. But boy, these are not fun times for marketing and just trying to get something positive done.
Right. Well, maybe this is a good thing to wind up with, talking about this time that we're in. You started out in a time that was pretty uncertain in the 80s, and now it certainly factors are different now, but any advice to give to maybe some of these younger producers that are starting along that now you've seen a few crop seasons, how should we look at this time we're in right now?
Well, and I always think of that because I was at a beginning farmer conference and I was a speaker, and Bill Norby, who was our newly elected Iowa Secretary of Ag, and now he's an undersecretary for FSA and crop insurance and NRCS. He's a big dog up there now. But he was the keynote speaker, and I actually went to college with Bill and have known him a long time. And that exact same, well, the question was, what are you going to do for me to these young things? And or from a younger farmer, and it really wasn't that bad a time. I think he was in the early 2006, I can't remember when he was elected, but I just went, all of us speakers there were kind of chuckled, and Bill said it right. Hey, I went home to farm in, let's see, I think 82 or 83, talk about tough times to start farming. And he said, we got no assistance, but you have to, he went in to get good at the marketing. He kind of said the same things I said before, you have to bring some value to that farm, and don't think that farm's just going to, be there to provide. So, I have told young people, if it means you have to get a job, you have to get a job. That's just the way it is now, So that you didn't catch us on a good day. It's raining out and I'm a farmer and it's in May. but I think a lot of times, hopefully these younger farmers don't expect that it's all going to be $5 corn, because we had those good times, but with the good comes the bad. And that's why I would say I spent a lot of years dog paddling just to keep my head above water, and it always worked out. Like I said, 34 years later, I've seen a lot of it, but they just have to remember you just have to keep on working it, keep a really tight control on your expenses and, what you really need, your wants rather than your needs. Do you need it or do you really kind of want it? So, because I really want a high-speed planter, but there's no way. Oh, well.
Well, I have really enjoyed this.
I don't know how well that answered your question, but that's kind of how it is.
Well, and I've really enjoyed this conversation. You do so much, not only on the farm, but in the whole ag industry. So it's really neat to not only hear that, but also get some of your perspectives on these things. I've really enjoyed the time to visit.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me on. I love this podcast. I'm listening to my tractor, so it's kind of great what you're doing too.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to this week's edition of our show. Remember, you can always go back and listen to past shows for great information on a variety of topics related to agriculture. I'm Andrew McRae for Farming the Countryside. The Farming the Countryside podcast has been brought to you by Nutrien Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services, delivering unparalleled grower access to high-performance inputs, innovative technologies, and personalized agronomic expertise.